Random House Audio presents A Dance with Dragons, Book 5 of A Song of Ice and Fire by George R. R. Martin, read for you by Roy Dotrice. Prologue. The night was rank with the smell of man. The warg stopped beneath a tree and sniffed, his grey-brown fur dappled by shadow. A sigh of piney wind brought the man scent to him, over fainter smells that spoke of fox and hare, seal and stag, even wolf. Those were man smells, too, the warg knew, the stink of old skins, dead and sour, ne'er drawn beneath the stronger scents of smoke and blood and rot. Only man stripped the skins from other beasts and wore their hides and hair. Wargs have no fear of man as wolves do. Hate and hunger coiled in his belly, and he gave a low growl, calling to his one-eyed brother, to his small, sly sister. As he raced through the trees, his packmates followed hard on his heels. They had caught the scent as well. As he ran, he saw through their eyes, too, and glimpsed himself ahead. The breath of the pack puffed warm and white from long grey jaws. Ice had frozen between their paws, hard as stone. But the hunt was on now, the prey ahead. Flesh, the warg thought, meat. A man alone was a feeble thing, big and strong with good sharp eyes, but dull of ear and deaf to smells. Deer and elk and even hares were faster, bears and boars fiercer in a fight. But men in packs were dangerous. As the wolves closed on the prey, the warg heard the wailing of a pup, the crust of last night's snow breaking under clumsy man paws, the rattle of hard skins, and the long grey claws men carried. Swords, a voice inside him whispered, spears. The trees had grown icy teeth, snarling down from the bare brown branches. One eye ripped through the undergrowth, spraying snow. His packmates followed. Up a hill and down the slope beyond, until the wood opened before them and the men were there. One was female. The fur-wrapped bundle she clutched was her pup. "Leave her for last," the voice whispered. "The males are the danger." They were roaring at each other as men did, but the warg could smell their terror. One had a wooden tooth as tall as he was. He flung it, but his hand was shaking and the tooth sailed high. Then the pack was on them. His one-eyed brother knocked the tooth-thrower back into a snowdrift and tore his throat out as he struggled. His sister slipped behind the other male and took him from the rear. That left the female and her pup for him. She had a tooth, too, a little one made of bone, but she dropped it when the warg's jaws closed around her leg. As she fell, she wrapped both arms around her noisy pup. Underneath her furs, the female was just skin and bones, but her dugs were full of milk. The sweetest meat was on the pup. The wolf saved the choicest parts for his brother. All around the carcasses, the frozen snow turned pink and red as the pack filled its bellies. Leagues away, in a one-room hut of mud and straw, with a thatched roof and a smoke hole and a floor of hard-packed earth, Varamir shivered and coughed and licked his lips. His eyes were red, his lips cracked, his throat dry and parched, but the taste of blood and fat filled his mouth, even as his swollen belly cried for nourishment. "A child's flesh," he thought, remembering Bump. "Human meat." Had he sunk so low as to hunger after human meat? He could almost hear Hagen growling at him. "Man may eat the flesh of beasts, and beasts the flesh of men, but the man who eats the flesh of man is an abomination." Abomination. That had always been Hagen's favourite word. Abomination, abomination, abomination. To eat of human meat was abomination. To mate as wolf with wolf was abomination. And to seize the body of another man was the worst abomination of all. Hagen was weak, afraid of his own power. He died weeping and alone when I ripped his second life from him. Verimir had devoured his heart himself. He taught me much and more, and the last thing I learned from him was the taste of human flesh. That was as a wolf, though. He had never eaten the meat of man with human teeth. He would not grudge his pack their feast, however. The wolves were as famished as he was, gaunt and cold and hungry, and the prey, two men and a woman, a babe in arms, fleeing from defeat to death. They would have perished soon in any case, from exposure or starvation. This way was better, quicker, a mercy. A mercy, he said aloud. His throat was raw, but it felt good to hear a human voice, even his own. The air smelled of mould and damp. The ground was cold and hard, and his fire was giving off more smoke than heat. He moved as close to the flames as he dared, coughing and shivering by turns, his side throbbing where his wound had opened. Blood had soaked his breeches to the knee and dried into a hard brown crust. Thistle had warned him that might happen.
"I sewed it up the best I could," she'd said. "But you need to rest and let it mend, or the flesh will tear open again."
Thistle had been the last of his companions, a spear-wife tough as an old root, warty, windburnt and wrinkled. The others had deserted them along the way. One by one they fell behind or forged ahead, making for their old villages, or the milk water, or hard home, or a lonely death in the woods. Faramir did not know and could not care. I should have taken one of them when I had the chance, one of the twins, or the big man with a scarred face, or the youth with the red hair. He had been afraid, though. One of the others might have realized what was happening. Then he would have turned on him and killed him, and Hagen's words had haunted him. And so the chance had passed. After the battle, there had been thousands of them struggling through the forest, hungry, frightened, fleeing the carnage that had descended on them at the wall. Some had talked of returning to the homes that they'd abandoned, others of mounting a second assault upon the gate, but most were lost, with no notion of where to go or what to do. They had escaped the black-cloaked crows and the knights in their grey steel, but more relentless enemies stalked them now. Every day left more corpses by the trails. Some died of hunger, some of cold, some of sickness. Others were slain by those who had been their brothers in arms when they marched south with Mance Raider, the king beyond the wall. "Mance is fallen," the survivors told each other in despairing voices. "Mance is taken. Mance is dead."
"Harm is dead, and Mance is captured. The rest run off and left us,"
Thistle had claimed, as she was sewing up his wound.
"Tormund, the Weeper, Sixskins, all them brave raiders, where are they now?"
"She does not know me," Varamyr realized then. "And why should she?" Without his beasts, he did not look like a great man. "I was Varamyr Sixskins, who broke bread with Mance Raider." He had named himself Varamyr when he was 10. "A name fit for a lord, a name for songs, a mighty name and fearsome." Yet he had run from the crows like a frightened rabbit. The terrible Lord Varamyr had gone craven, but he could not bear that she should know that. So he told the spearwife that his name was Hagen. Afterwards he wondered why that name had come to his lips, of all those he might have chosen. "I ate his heart and drank his blood, and still he haunts me." One day, as they fled, a rider came galloping through the woods on a gaunt white horse, shouting they should all make for the milk water, that the Weeper was gathering warriors to cross the Bridge of Skulls and take the Shadow Tower. Many followed him, more did not. Later a dual warrior in fur and amber went from cookfire to cookfire, urging all the survivors to head north and take refuge in the Valley of the Thens. Why he thought they would be safe there, when the Thens themselves had fled the place, Varamyr never learned, but hundreds followed him. Hundreds more went off with a woods witch, who'd had a vision of a fleet of ships coming to carry the free folk south.
"We must seek the sea," cried Mother Mole,
and her followers turned east. Varamyr might have been amongst them, if only he'd been stronger. The sea was grey and cold and far away, though, and he knew that he would never live to see it. He was 9 times dead and dying, and this would be his true death. "A squirrel skin cloak," he remembered. "He knifed me for a squirrel skin cloak." Its owner had been dead, the back of her head smashed into red pulp flecked with bits of bone, but her cloak looked warm and thick. It was snowing, and Varamyr had lost his own cloaks at the wall. His sleeping pelts and woolen small clothes, his sheepskin boots and fur-lined gloves, his store of mead and hoarded food, the hanks of hair he took from the women he bedded, even the golden arm rings Mance had given him, all lost and left behind. "I burned, and I died, and then I ran, half mad with pain and terror." The memory still shamed him, but he had not been alone. Others had run as well, hundreds of them, thousands. The battle was lost. The knights had come, invincible in their steel, killing everyone who stayed to fight. It was run or die. Death was not so easily outrun, however. So when Varamyr came upon the dead woman in the wood, he knelt to strip the cloak from her, and never saw the boy until he burst from hiding to drive the long bone knife into his side and rip the cloak out of his clutching fingers.
"His mother," Thistle told him later, after the boy had run off. "It were his mother's cloak, and when he saw you rubbing her—"
"She was dead," Varamyr said, wincing as her bone needle pierced his flesh. "Someone smashed her head. Some crow."
"No crow. Hornfoot men, I saw it."
Her needle pulled the gash in his side closed.
"Savages. And who's left to tame them?"
"No one. If Mance is dead, the free folk are doomed. The Thens, giants, and the Hornfoot men, the cave dwellers with their file teeth, and the men of the western shore with their chariots of bone. All of them were doomed as well. Even the crows, they might not know it yet, but those black-cloaked bastards would perish with the rest. The enemy was coming." Hagen's rough voice echoed in his head.
"You will die a dozen deaths, boy, and everyone will hurt, but when your true death comes, you will live again. The second life is simpler and sweeter, they say."
Varamyr Sixskins would know the truth of that soon enough. He could taste his true death in the smoke that hung acrid in the air, feel it in the heat beneath his fingers when he slipped a hand under his clothes to touch his wound. The chill was in him too, though deep down in his bones. This time it would be cold that killed him. His last death had been by fire. "I burned." At first, in his confusion, he thought some archer on the wall had pierced him with a flaming arrow. But the fire had been inside him, consuming him. And the pain... Vladimir had died 9 times before. He had died once from a spear thrust, once with a bear's teeth in his throat, and once in a wash of blood as he brought forth a stillborn cub. He died his first death when he was only 6, as his father's axe crashed through his skull. Even that had not been so agonizing as the fire in his guts, cracking along his wings, devouring him when he tried to fly from it. His terror fanned the flames and made them burn hotter. One moment he had been soaring above the wall, his eagle's eyes marking the movements of the men below. Then the flames had turned his heart into a blackened cinder and sent his spirit screaming back into his own skin, and for a little while he'd gone mad. Even the memory was enough to make him shudder. That was when he noticed that his fire had gone out. Only a grey and black tangle of charred wood remained, with a few embers glowing in the ashes. "There's still smoke. It just needs wood." Gritting his teeth against the pain, Varamyr crept to the pile of broken branches Thistle had gathered before she went off hunting, and tossed a few sticks onto the ashes. "Catch," he croaked. "Burn!" He blew upon the embers and said a wordless prayer to the nameless gods of wood and hill and field. The gods gave no answer. After a while, the smoke ceased to rise as well. Already the little hut was growing colder. Varamyr had no flint, no tinder, no dry kindling. He would never get the fire burning again, not by himself.
"Thistle!"
he called out, his voice hoarse and edged with pain.
"Thistle!"
Her chin was pointed and her nose flat, and she had a mole on one cheek and four dark hairs growing from it. An ugly face and hard, yet he would give much to glimpse it in the door of the hut. "I should have taken her before she left." How long had she been gone? 2 days? Three? Varamyr was uncertain. It was dark inside the hut, and he had been drifting in and out of sleep, never quite sure if it was day or night outside.
"Wait," she'd said. "I will be back with food."
So like a fool he'd waited, dreaming of Hagen and Bump and all the wrongs he had done in his long life. But days and nights had passed, and Thistle had not returned.
"She won't be coming back."
Varamyr wondered if he had given himself away. Could she tell what he was thinking just from looking at him? Or had he muttered in his fever dream?
"Abomination," he heard Hagen saying.
It was almost as if he were here, in this very room. "She is just some ugly spearwife," Varamyr told him. "I am a great man. I am Varamyr, the warg, the skin changer. It is not right that she should live and I should die." No one answered. There was no one there. Thistle was gone. She had abandoned him, the same as all the rest. His own mother had abandoned him as well.
"She cried for Bump, but she never cried for me."
The morning his father pulled him out of bed to deliver him to Hagen, she would not even look at him. He had shrieked and kicked as he was dragged into the woods until his father slapped him and told him to be quiet.
"You belong with your own kind," was all he said when he flung him down at Hagen's feet.
Oh, he was not wrong, Varamyr thought, shivering. "Hagen taught me much and more. He taught me how to hunt and fish, how to butcher a carcass and bone a fish, how to find my way through the woods. And he taught me the way of the warg and the secrets of the skin changer, though my gift was stronger than his own." Years later, he had tried to find his parents, to tell them that their lump had become the great Varamyr Sixskins, but both of them were dead and burned.
"Gone into the trees and streams, gone into the rocks and earth, gone to dirt and ashes."
That was what the woods witch told his mother the day Bump died. Lump did not want to be a clod of earth. The boy had dreamed of a day when bards would sing of his deeds and pretty girls would kiss him.
"When I'm grown, I will be king beyond the wall," Lump had promised himself.
He never had, but he had come close. Varamyr Sixskins was a name men feared. He rode to battle on the back of a snow bear 13 feet tall, kept 3 wolves and a shadow cat in thrall, and sat at the right hand of Mance Raider.
"It was Mance who brought me to this place. I should not have listened. I should have slipped inside my bear and torn him to pieces."
Before Mance, Varamyr Sixskins had been a lord of sorts. He lived alone in a hall of moss and mud and hewn logs that had once been Hagen's, attended by his beasts. 12 villagers did him homage in bread and salt and cider, offering him fruit from their orchards and vegetables from their gardens. His meat he got himself. Whenever he desired a woman, he sent his shadow cat to stalk her, and whatever girl he'd cast his eye upon would follow meekly to his bed. Some came weeping, aye, but still they came. Varamyr gave them his seed, took a hank of their hair to remember them by, and sent them back. From time to time, some village hero would come with spear in hand to slay the beastling and save a sister or a lover or a daughter. Those he killed, but he never harmed the women. Some he even blessed with children. Runts, small, puny things like Lump, and not one with a gift. Fear drove him to his feet, reeling, holding his side to staunch the seep of blood from his wound. Faramir lurched to the door and swept aside the ragged skin that covered it to face a wall of white. Snow! No wonder it had grown so dark and smoky inside. The falling snow had buried the hut. When Faramir pushed at it, the snow crumbled and gave way, still soft and wet. Outside, the night was white as death. Pale, thin clouds danced attendance on a silver moon, while a thousand stars watched coldly. He could see the humped shapes of other huts buried beneath drifts of snow, and beyond them the pale shadow of a weirwood armored in ice. To the south and west the hills were a vast white wilderness where nothing moved except the blowing snow.
"Thistle!"
Varamir called feebly, wondering how far she could have gone.
"Thistle! Woman, where are you?"
Far away a wolf gave howl. A shiver went through Faramir. He knew that howl as well as Lump had once known his mother's voice. One Eye. He was the oldest of the three, the biggest, the fiercest. Stalker was leaner, quicker, younger, sly, more cunning. But both went in fear of One Eye. The old wolf was fearless, relentless, savage. Faramir had lost control of his other beasts in the agony of the eagle's death. His shadow cat had raced into the woods whilst his snow bear turned her claws on those around her, ripping apart four men before falling to a spear. She would have slain Faramir had he come within her reach. The bear hated him, had raged each time he wore her skin or climbed upon her back. His wolves, though, my brothers, my pack. Many a cold night he had slept with his wolves, their shaggy bodies piled up around him to help keep him warm. When I die, they will feast upon my flesh, and leave only bones to greet the thaw come spring. The thought was queerly comforting. His wolves had often foraged for him as they roamed. It seemed only fitting that he should feed them in the end. He might well begin his second life tearing at the warm, dead flesh of his own corpse. Dogs were the easiest beasts to bond with. They lived so close to men that they were almost human. Slipping into a dog's skin was like putting on an old boot, its leather softened by wear. As a boot was shaped to accept a foot, a dog was shaped to accept a collar, even a collar no human eye could see. Wolves were harder. A man might befriend a wolf, even break a wolf, but no man could truly tame a wolf.
"Wolves and women wed for life," Hagen often said. "You take one, that's a marriage. The wolf is part of you from that day on, and you're part of him. Both of you will change."
Other beasts were best left alone, the hunter had declared. Cats were vain and cruel, always ready to turn on you. Elk and deer were prey, wear their skins too long, and even the bravest man became a coward. Bears, boars, badgers, weasels. Hagen did not hold with such.
"Some skins you never want to wear, boy. You won't like what you'd become."
Birds were the worst, to hear him tell it.
"Men were not meant to leave the earth. Spend too much time in the clouds, and you never want to come back down again. I know skin changers who've tried hawks, owls, ravens. Even in their own skins, they sit moony, staring up at the bloody blue."
Not all skin changers felt the same, however. Once when Lump was 10, Hagen had taken him to a gathering of such. The wargs were the most numerous in that company, the wolf brothers, but the boy had found the others stranger and more fascinating. Borak looked so much like his boar that all he lacked was tusks. Oral had his eagle, Briar her shadow cat. The moment he saw them, Lump wanted a shadow cat of his own. The goat woman, Grisella. None of them had been as strong as Varamir's six skins, though. Not even Hagen, tall and grim, with his hands as hard as stone. The hunter died weeping after Faramir took Greyskin from him, driving him out to claim the beast for his own. No second life for you, old man. Varamir Threeskins, he'd called himself back then. Greyskin made four, though the old wolf was frail and almost toothless, and soon followed Hagen into death. Varamir could take any beast he wanted, bend them to his will, make their flesh his own, dog or wolf, bear or badger. Thistle, he thought. Hagen would call it an abomination, the blackest sin of all. But Hagen was dead, devoured and burned. Mance would have cursed him as well, but Mance was slain or captured. No one will ever know. I will be Thistle, the spearwife, and Varamir Sixskins will be dead. His gift would perish with his body, he expected. He would lose his wolves and live out the rest of his days as some scrawny, warty woman. But he would live. If she comes back, if I am still strong enough to take her. A wave of dizziness washed over Varamir. He found himself upon his knees, his hands buried in a snowdrift. He scooped up a fistful of snow and filled his mouth with it, rubbing it through his beard and against his cracked lips, sucking down the moisture. The water was so cold that he could barely bring himself to swallow, and he realized once again how hot he was. The snow melt only made him hungrier. It was food his belly craved, not water. The snow had stopped falling, but the wind was rising, filling the air with crystal, slashing at his face as he struggled through the drifts, the wound in his side opening and closing again. His breath made a ragged white cloud. When he reached the weirwood tree, he found a fallen branch just long enough to use as a crutch. Leaning heavily upon it, he staggered toward the nearest hut. Perhaps the villagers had forgotten something when they fled. A sack of apples, some dried meat, anything to keep him alive until Thistle returned. He was almost there when his crutch snapped beneath his weight and his legs went out from under him. How long he sprawled there with his blood reddening the snow, Varamir could not have said. The snow will bury me. It would be a peaceful death. They say you feel warm near the end, warm and sleepy. It would be good to feel warm again, though it made him sad to think that he would never see the green lands, the warm lands beyond the wall that Mance used to sing about. The world beyond the wall is not for our kind, Hagen used to say. The free folk fear skin changers, but they honour us as well. South of the wall, the kneelers hunt us down and butcher us like pigs. You warned me, Varamir thought, but it was you who showed me Eastwatch too. He could not have been more than 10. Hagen traded a dozen strings of amber and a sled piled high with pelts for 6 skins of wine, a block of salt, and a copper kettle. Eastwatch was a better place to trade than Castle Black. That was where the ships came, laden with goods from the fabled lands beyond the sea. The crows knew Hagen as a hunter and a friend to the Night's Watch, and welcomed the news he brought of life beyond their wall. Some knew him for a skin changer, too, but no one spoke of that. It was there at Eastwatch by the sea that the boy he'd been first began to dream of the warm south. Varamir could feel the snowflakes melting on his brow. This is not so bad as burning. Let me sleep and never wake. Let me begin my second life. His wolves were close now. He could feel them. He would leave this feeble flesh behind, become one with them, hunting the night and howling at the moon. The warg would become a true wolf. Which, though? Not sly. Hagen would have called it abomination. But Varamir had often slipped inside her skin as she was being mounted by One Eye. He did not want to spend his new life as a bitch, though, not unless he had no other choice. Stalker might suit him better, the younger male, though One Eye was larger and fiercer, and it was One Eye who took Sly whenever she went into heat. They say you forget, Hagen had told him a few weeks before his own death. When the man's flesh dies, his spirit lives on inside the beast.
but every day his memory fades, and the beast becomes a little less a warg, a little more a wolf, until nothing of the man is left, and only the beast remains.
Vadimir knew the truth of that when he claimed the eagle that had been Oral's. He could feel the other skin changer raging at his presence. Oral had been slain by the turncloak crow Jon Snow, and his hate for his killer had been so strong that Vadimir found himself hating the beastling boy as well. He had known what Snow was the moment he saw that great white direwolf stalking silent at his side. One skin changer can always sense another.
Munch should have let me take the direwolf. There would be a second life worthy of a king.
He could have done it, he did not doubt. The gift was strong in Snow, but the youth was untaught, still fighting his nature when he should have gloried in it. Vadimir could see the weirwood's red eyes staring down at him from the white trunk.
The gods are weighing me.
A shiver went through him. He had done bad things, terrible things. He had stolen, killed, raped. He had gorged on human flesh and lapped the blood of dying men as it gushed red and hot from their torn throats. He had stalked foes through the woods, fallen on them as they slept, clawed their entrails from their bellies and scattered them across the muddy earth.
How sweet their meat had tasted! That was the beast, not me,
he said in a hoarse whisper.
That was the gift you gave me.
The guards made no reply. His breath hung pale and misty in the air. He could feel ice forming in his beard. Vadimir Sixskins closed his eyes. He dreamt an old dream of a hovel by the sea, three dogs whimpering, a woman's tears.
Bump! She weeps for Bump, but she never wept for me.
Lump had been born a month before his proper time, and he was sick so often that no one expected him to live. His mother waited until he was almost four to give him a proper name, and by then it was too late. The whole village had taken to calling him Lump. The name his sister, Miha, had given him when he was still in their mother's belly. Miha had given Bump his name as well, but Lump's little brother had been born in his proper time, big and red and robust, sucking greedily at mother's teats. She was going to name him after father.
Bump died, though. He died when he was two, and I was six, 3 days before his name day.
Your little one is with the gods now,
the woods witch told his mother as she wept.
He'll never hurt again, never hunger, never cry. The gods have taken him down into the earth, into the trees. The gods are all around us, in the rocks and streams, in the birds and beasts. Your Bump has gone to join them. He'll be the world and all that's in it.
The old woman's words had gone through Lump like a knife.
Bump sees. He's watching me. He knows.
Lump could not hide from him, could not slip behind his mother's skirts or run off with the dogs to escape his father's fury.
The dogs,
Loptail, Sniff, the growler,
they were good dogs. They were my friends.
When his father found the dog sniffing around Bump's body, he had no way of knowing which had done it, so he took his axe to all three. His hand shook so badly that it took two blows to silence Sniff and four to put the growler down. The smell of blood hung heavy in the air, and the sounds the dying dogs had made were terrible to hear. Yet Loptail still came when father called him. He was the oldest dog, and his training overcame his terror. By the time Lump slipped inside his skin, it was too late.
No, father, please,
he tried to say, but dogs cannot speak the tongues of men, so all that emerged was a piteous whine. The axe crashed into the middle of the old dog's skull, and inside the hovel the boy let out a scream.
That was how they knew.
2 days later, his father dragged him into the woods. He brought his axe, so Lump thought he meant to put him down the same way he had done the dogs. Instead, he'd given him to Hagen. Vladimir woke suddenly, violently, his whole body shaking.
"Get up!" a voice was screaming. "Get up! We have to go! There are hundreds of them!"
The snow had covered him with a stiff white blanket. "So cold!" When he tried to move, he found that his hand was frozen to the ground. He left some skin behind when he tore it loose.
"Get up!" she screamed again. "They're coming!"
Thistle had returned to him. She had him by the shoulders, and she was shaking him, shouting in his face. Vladimir could smell her breath and feel the warmth of it upon cheeks gone numb with cold.
"No," he thought. "Do it now, or die."
He summoned all the strength still in him, leapt out of his own skin, and forced himself inside her. Thistle arched her back and screamed, "Abomination!" Was that her, or him, or Hagen? He never knew. His old flesh fell back into the snowdrift as her fingers loosened. The spear wife twisted violently, shrieking. His shadow cat used to fight him wildly, and the snow bear had gone half mad for a time, snapping at trees and rocks and empty air. But this was worse.
"Get out! Get out!"
he heard her own mouth shouting. Her body staggered, fell, and rose again. Her hands flailed, her legs jerked this way and that in some grotesque dance, as his spirit and her own fought for the flesh. She sucked down a mouthful of the frigid air, and Vladimir had half a heartbeat to glory in the taste of it and the strength of this young body before her teeth snapped together and filled his mouth with blood. She raised her hands to his face. He tried to push them down again, but the hands would not obey, and she was clawing at his eyes. "Abomination," he remembered, drowning in blood and pain and madness. When he tried to scream, she spat their tongue out. The white world turned and fell away. For a moment, it was as if he were inside the weirwood, gazing out through carved red eyes as a dying man twitched feebly on the ground and a mad woman danced, blind and bloody, underneath the moon, weeping red tears and ripping at her clothes. Then both were gone, and he was rising, melting, his spirit borne on some cold wind. He was in the snow and in the clouds. He was a sparrow, a squirrel, an oak. A horned owl flew silently between his trees, hunting a hare. Vladimir was inside the owl, inside the hare, inside the trees. Deep below the frozen ground, earthworms burrowed blindly in the dark, and he was them as well.
"I am the wood and everything that's in it," he thought, exulting.
100 ravens took to the air, cawing as they felt him pass. A great elk trumpeted, unsettling the children clinging to his back. A sleeping direwolf raised his head to snarl at empty air. Before their hearts could beat again, he had passed on, searching for his own, for One Eye, Sly, and Stalker, for Peck. His wolves would save him, he told himself. That was his last thought, as a man. True death came suddenly. He felt a shock of cold, as if he had been plunged into the icy waters of a frozen lake. Then he found himself rushing over moonlit snows with his packmates close behind him. Half the world was dark. One Eye, he knew. He bayed, and Sly and Stalker gave echo. When they reached the crest, the wolves paused. Thistle, he remembered, and a part of him grieved for what he had lost, and another part for what he'd done. Below, the world had turned to ice. Fingers of frost crept slowly up the weirwood, reaching out for each other. The empty village was no longer empty. Blue-eyed shadows walked amongst the mounds of snow. Some wore brown and some wore black, and some were naked, their flesh gone white as snow. A wind was sighing through the hills, heavy with their scents. Dead flesh, dry blood, skins that stank of mold, and rot and urine. Sly gave a growl and bared her teeth, her ruff bristling.
Not men, not prey, not these.
The things below moved, but did not live. One by one they raised their heads toward the three wolves on the hill. The last to look was the thing that had been Thistle. She wore wool and fur and leather, and over that she wore a coat of hoarfrost that crackled when she moved and glistened in the moonlight. Pale pink icicles hung from her fingertips, 10 long knives of frozen blood, and in the pits where her eyes had been, a pale blue light was flickering, lending her coarse features an eerie beauty they had never known in life. "Oh, she sees me,"